and gentlemen, welcome to the Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have you aboard tonight, everybody. I got a big show here tonight for you. Been waiting to sort of talk to this gentleman for a while. Was going to wait till the school year started, but I know it's technically started, but kind of a weird way to start it anyway, as we aren't there and certainly not on campus anyway. You do know him very well, though. He is a regular in terms of being at the rink. He certainly has been around for a few years and seen and done just about everything in university hockey when it comes to the women's program. He is the 2018 national champion head coach of the Manitoba Bisons. You know him. I know him. We know him as Mr. John Rempel. John, how are you?
I'm good, Teebs. Thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you. Always glad to get your opinion on stuff that's going on and certainly maybe some insight as to what may be happening with the team and the season and what may be going on here. Just want to, before we get started, I'm sure you've heard the news as well, John. Last week, big announcement out of the East Coast anyway. As McGill's longtime head coach of their women's program, Mr. Peter Smith, has decided to step back. He's retiring from the coaching scene. The 67-year-old Smith, retiring as probably one of the most decorated coaches in Canadian university hockey history after serving as the Martlet's head coach for the past 21 years. The guy has been around and has turned that program into a powerhouse. 17 of the 20 years he was behind the bench, they went to the CIS and U Sports National Championships. I know, John, you probably had some experience with them. What do you remember best about Peter in terms of being in the coaching fraternity there?
Well, Peter's teams have always been just so prepared. I mean, you know, aside from being able to attract great athletes to his program, which he's been able to do, just the overall skill level combined with structure, combined with a really disciplined mentality. I mean, that those are the things that I know about Peter's teams. Had the good fortune to play against them a number of times along the way in some exhibition stuff and also at national championships as well. So it's interesting that you bring that up because I just sent him a note the other day saying congrats on the retirement and, you know, just how much I kind of learned from playing against him and watching him coach and picking his brain at various things we were at. So a real gentleman in the game, really respectful of the game, always looking to get better. And you know, one of those people that I always kind of really looked up to. You know, he actually started coaching at this level quite late. You know, and I think his experience doing other things was a large part in his success because he had a lot of life experience before he actually took on this role. And he obviously has left a huge legacy there. So, you know, I'll miss coaching against Peter because if you didn't have your best on the bench and your players weren't ready, you weren't going to be able to have a lot of success against them.
Yeah, I mean, Peter, I mean, his track record speaks for itself. Like you were saying, four times McGill was national champion. They brought home the silver medal five times, bronze medals five times. I mean, they, like you said, went in prepared and certainly were there to compete as much as anybody else when they were there at national championships. For those who don't know Peter, you may know him a little bit better on the international scene. He did help Canada win a gold medal at the 2006 Turin Olympics and 2010 Vancouver Olympics as an assistant coach on that Canadian bench. So leaving behind a big legacy and certainly some big shoes to fill no matter what happens there. And certainly we wish Peter, at least, I mean, both of us do anyway, wish him best going forward and certainly in his retirement there because it's going to be a big hole to fill in the coaching ranks, that's for sure. So without any further ado, though, and certainly want to focus on the coach that's in front of me here today, I want to talk to you, John, about everything that's going on. First off, how's everything going? Are you back in sort of school? Are you back in your office getting things sort of organized for everything for this year?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been in here actually quite a bit in August, particularly in the mornings. It's very quiet. There's a few more people around here now, but yeah, I've been working, you know, towards sort of whatever return to play looks like, and whatever normal really is right now. I don't think anybody quite knows that right now. But, you know, we actually started camp yesterday. We were fortunate enough to be able to start doing some off-ice stuff. Okay. We did some testing yesterday and sort of got the new girls sort of starting to get, sort of acclimatized to what we're doing. And we've been doing Zoom with them all the way since March, actually, the whole team. So it's been, like most people, it's been a kind of a different kettle of fish in terms of how you operate and how you manage your stuff and how you communicate. And you know, Zoom has become really quite onerous for most people, but I've actually found it to be useful moving forward to some things that I never would have thought of that would be beneficial to a group like ours. But I've found some things here that I think moving forward. So I think that every situation, this being obviously an exceptional one, but every situation that you go through, you have to look for ways to take the best out of those situations and take some positives and really forces you to out of your comfort zone. And that's certainly what's been going on here.
So the Zoom meetings you've been having over the spring certainly have sound like they've gone well, though. But I mean, girls have responded well to them. They haven't been too down on the fact that there's no hockey to play, no place to go play.
You know what? It's the same thing that I just said. We really reinforced the positive of the situation that we're in and making the best of what we have in front of us. We have a very young group, which from a developmental perspective is really, really good. We could probably take some more time to do some things that maybe we haven't done well in the past in terms of, you know, in some ways helping our young players really have a thorough understanding of what it is we want to accomplish here. Because when you get in the throes of the competitive season, sometimes some of that stuff gets lost, mm-hmm. and it shouldn't, but it does. So I think that piece has been really, really good so far. I've seen some really good stuff. Our leadership group has been really, really good in terms of reinforcing those principles and not, taking that woe is me attitude. I certainly have not seen that at all. And I think, being hopeful but not giving false hope is kind of the message I've kind of sent the whole way along. So it really is out of our control. And the only thing we can control is what we do on a day-to-day basis in terms of preparation and, on learning. And that's what we're trying to do.
How have the senior players, the players who are coming up to graduate, players like Janae Buchanan, Megan Duzik, Sheridan Oswald, how have they been taking it? Because I mean, honestly, this is kind of the worst kind of senior season you can have where, I mean, you don't really get to play a lot if you do get to play at all. And I kind of feel bad for them because they've worked so hard. They've put in a ton of time. This is supposed to be their year. And really, I mean, it's not a year at all.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that is a tough situation, but again, I think these are pretty mature, citizens you're talking about here that, really kind of understand life, and understand that life doesn't always follow a script that you want it to. So I think probably I can't speak for them necessarily in terms of, I think they've probably all gone through some sort of grieving process. I think in this case, you kind of have to about something that's been lost. Whether or not we actually get to pick up in January or not, who knows, but I think they've probably come to terms with, what's in front of them. And the fact of the matter is that they have a responsibility here to the program and to themselves and to the players that are coming behind them. They understand that. We've had that discussion. Outwardly they certainly are on board with that. And I think their behavior and their language and the way that they speak would say that. I think they truly believe that too. So I think their heads are in a pretty good space, and yeah, they're disappointed and we're disappointed for them and all the rest of that stuff. But, there's still value in the experience for them and for everybody around them. So, and we're just trying to help them, navigate that and help them just continue to be good leaders, and the leadership is a skill that grows and develops and on a continuum. It's not something you all said one day you're a leader. So I think this is a valuable experience for them that will ultimately in their lives will probably serve them really well.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not, by all means wasn't questioning any of their character, just, a little disappointment. That's all. I mean, they are fantastic people. And I mean, our experience with them has always been positive. So a couple of changes, I guess, for you though, this year, you're going to have a new assistant coach after Venla got the opportunity of a lifetime to hop out take over a program out of the Okanagan Hockey Academy there. First off, she looks like she's enjoying herself. Have you heard from her? Has she reached back and said, John, you got any advice for me or anything like that?
We've had a couple of emails. It sounds like she settled right in, and that doesn't surprise me because she's not a person that will wait for things to happen. She's a proactive initiator of things, and so I'm not surprised by that. Yeah, we've had a couple of conversations. She's asked me a couple of questions about certain things, and I'm still trying to share certain kinds of information that we're doing here and those kinds of things. So I expect she'll do well, and I expect the players under her will respond to her style.
From everything I've seen online so far, it looks like things are going well for her. So obviously they're going to be a new person. You don't have to break any news here today, but Matt kind of dropped some hints that you're going to have somebody new beside you on the bench. Do you want to reveal anything today, or should we just move on from that?
Oh yeah, no, it's not a secret. I mean, we also lost Sean Fisher, unfortunately, too. So
okay.
I didn't know if you were aware of that. So Sean.
Yeah, no, where did Sean go? Let's start with Sean then. Where did he go?
Well, Sean's position was, Sean's been laid off here. So,
right, yeah.
Sean's back in Kingston, and it doesn't look like there will be a return there. For sure not this year.
Okay.
You know, so the staff, it looks quite a bit different. One of my alumni, Alana Sirhan, is going to be on the staff. I've been coaching, the last couple of years at the minor hockey level, and really, I think, has a passion for it. I think she's quite serious about it, and I was happy to bring her on board, and we have Neil Chow, who really fortunate to have Neil on our staff. Neil helped out a couple of years ago when I was on sabbatical, but he's taking a more active, more sort of in-depth role this year in terms of the things that he's able to offer. And I've been around a lot of hockey people in my life, but not many like Neil. So it's nothing but positive there in terms of, sort of a new sort of way of thinking and teaching and learning and growing. So I'm excited by the staff. Yeah. Big losses, those other two. It's the nature of the business, and you have to be flexible and adaptable to, and I'm fortunate to have good people around me that want to be involved. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, Alana's got the experience of Team Manitoba as well. So, I mean, getting an up-and-coming coach for sure is always a good and a bright spot. So we were also impressed to see that Matt got himself a new renoed workspace there too. A little bit of a better place to work out of this year for sure.
we spent a full day there. That was, I'll tell you that.
Matt's a good guy. We love having him on. So we'll laugh about that in a second. I got to ask you though. I mean, obviously you made a mention about having a younger team, and certainly one of the things that we went over a lot of last year, especially on broadcast, were just some of the scoring struggles. And again, I mean, I get that with a younger team, lots of rookies last year. You guys had, 12 rookies in camp and certainly on the ice at some points. Yeah. How is it in terms of what do you need to do in order to get them to sort of figure out this game a little bit faster? Because at times last year, and I mean, I'll reference the ugly shutout streak that you guys went through, it looked like there were times where the offensive zone was just a dream, not an actual reality.
Yeah, I don't like to make excuses for it. So being young is probably only a part of it.
Okay.
You could talk a lot about the lack of depth probably last year, where I think a lot of kids were we couldn't insulate kids, and I think that was part of it for sure. Some of these kids were forced into roles that they probably weren't ready for, to be honest with you. The jump is pretty big, as you're aware. The nature of play in Canada West is so structured and so defensive minded to begin with, for I would say probably 90% of the teams, that the offensive part of the game doesn't particularly come probably naturally to a lot of players to begin with. And when you get to this level, you're fighting the battle on a lot of fronts. You're fighting the strength battle, you're fighting the experience battle, you're fighting the conditioning battle, you're fighting the training age battle. you're in a new sort of academic environment, so there's stressors there. The demands at this level are so much more than any demands at any other level, as what they've been exposed to. I think too, the nature of the way that I coach is part of that too. I mean, defense first has sort of always been my thing. You know, I think there's some fairly big philosophical changes going on here in the next year or two, starting right now. And it started a bit last year, but in terms of offensive principles of play and offensive tactics and those kinds of things, it certainly falls on the coaching and me being at the top. I mean, I have to, you know, probably adjust my thinking a little bit to respond to the way the game is changing. The game is changing. And if you can't respond to that and evolve and help your players learn and be able to practice the right things, it's really hard to expect them to score, I would say. So, you know, I think that piece of it is part of it. So there's a lot of different things there in play. And the reality is we gotta not necessarily just work harder. We work hard all the time, but we gotta work smarter, recognizing that the offensive part of the game is something you have to practice, and you just can't expect kids at this level to come in and be great offensive players, because that just doesn't happen. The coaching's too good. Every team knows what every team is doing, so whichever team does it better is usually the team that has consistent success, I think. And you know, so I think there's a variety of things there. Some of it, again, is inherent in where we are in the progression of things, but I don't really think that's an excuse. I mean, I don't think we as a group did a great job last year, really working on the things that we needed to do. There were a lot of things we needed to do, and there's some things we didn't get to, and you could see that.
I'm going to take nothing away from you guys. Again, you guys, you're right, John. I mean, you guys worked hard every game. There's no doubt about that. The girls put in an incredible effort all year. You referenced the fact that it's a defensive sort of minded conference, and I want to ask about that, because since 2014, 2015, scoring has basically gone down every year overall for all eight teams. It's kind of funny, 2014, 2015, 517 goals scored by all eight teams to last year, 411 goals scored. So over 6 years, 100 goals reduced in terms of the total of overall. Is that a reflection of just A, how good the players are getting, B, how good the coaching is getting, or C, kind of a little bit of both?
I think there's that what you all mentioned there is probably all part of it. And I think the one thing you didn't mention is that the goaltending position at this level has far exceeded the technical development of any other position of the players that we get at the U Sport level. It's not even close, to be honest with you. You look at every team in our conference, and every team has one constant. They all have goaltending. It doesn't matter where their other weaknesses are. They all have it. And, you know, is it because it's a specialized position? Is it because of the goaltending coaches that are available to these girls? I don't really know 100% for sure. So that's also part of it. All of that stuff is part of it. And I, what I just said about myself is I coach against a lot of coaches that think probably the way that I do, because it's actually easier to coach defense, because to get your players to work harder on defense connected together in a structure is much easier than learning and helping them grow and develop into offensive players that play the same way connected wise on offense. So that's the challenge in front of us as a group. It's the challenge in front of me as a coach. It's the challenge that, you know, Neil is who I was speaking about before. Neil is an incredibly bright, incredibly just really, really comprehensive coach that is pushing me to think the game differently and supporting my efforts to want to change a little bit. So I really feel strongly that this group is going to respond to that, and there's some really talented kids in this program, that are already here, and some new ones too, and those kinds of things. And those are kids that we want to be able to help them take advantage of the skill sets that they do have, you know, and not every player can come here, and we can't put every player in a box and say, okay, you've got to play like this. Otherwise, you know, so there's that mindset too.
A lot of key players this year, and I mean, I'll mention them because they're offensive players mostly in terms of what we remember, but a lot of key players this year, Poznikov, McDougal, Dillon from Alberta, Barasa, Bolkin, the Willoughby sisters, Nutter from Saskatchewan, Magwood, McManell from Regina, obviously Clayton Carroll, Fisher, Ogradnichuk from BUBC, me, our own Jordy Zacharias, all gone. A lot of offense that graduated this year. There's going to be some players that have to step up and fill the void. We saw some great performances last year. From your perspective, not so much focusing on your own team, but maybe on the conference, who are you looking for to maybe make, you know, make steps forward this year that you guys are going to have to key on?
Oh, man, that's a good question because I can't, I'm just not familiar enough with what's left on a lot of those rosters. that is a tough question for me. I know UBC's still got a fairly amount, good amount of pretty young talent there that are really have learned quite a bit in the last couple of years. You know, I think Calgary had a real breakout year in terms of some of their kids really starting to get it. You know, so I'm not sure, like, specifically, quite honestly, who I would – I just – that's not been on my brain very much, so I really don't know how to answer your question.
No, I mean, that's fair. I just didn't know if there were players where you were like, you know what, I see a breakout for next year. But, I mean, that's okay, too. I mean, we saw some pretty good breakouts this year from your own team. I mean, players like Kate Gregoire at the end of the season figured it out pretty quick and, you know, go to the net, go to your spots where you're going to be successful. Are you guys looking for some big years out of some players here on Manitoba then?
Yeah. I mean, if we're able to play, I mean, right. I would expect there would be some progression there. You know, Kate really took a step forward. I mean, you know, and I think when Jordy got healthy finally and, you know, it was always the plan to play her and Kate together, but you know, Jordy wasn't healthy in the first half of the year. You know, and it took Kate half a year to really find her, to get her feet wet, as it does with a lot of these kids. So, yeah, I would expect Kate's that kind of player. She has breakout sort of natural gifted abilities. She knows how to play stretch hockey. You know, I think Sarah Dennehy was kind of snake bit last year and really, you know, had to figure out how to play at this level. And it took her a full year to do that. But I could see signs there that there would be some more offense. You know, I think I thought Molly Kunis really improved last year from beginning of the year till the end of the season. I thought she really started to gain some confidence. I think that her size and her frame and her hands can really help. You know, so and the group coming in this year has some real abilities to do some things. So I would expect that you know, some of them would probably help that as well.
How big in your mind, and certainly you probably see this as a coach a lot, how big is that confidence factor though going into that? Because we seem to see rookies come in and yeah, you know what, they're gonna have a good season, and then all of a sudden it looks like deer in a headlight sometimes when they're on the ice against bigger, stronger, faster players. And we kind of go, it'll come, but when?
Yeah, I mean every individual is different. I mean every individual right. comes to the plate with different levels of that kind of stuff. I mean, some of it is predicated on personality. Some of it's predicated on previous coaches that have either reinforced that or haven't reinforced that. Comes from roles they've previously been in to what their role is here probably to begin with. You know, how do they respond to a new style of coaching and a new style of demands? That's also part of it for sure. You know, and how can you build relationships with those players to figure out what their strengths are and play to their strengths and sort of bring that out in them. Right. I think as coaches, we often, not all coaches do that. And you can get in trouble when, you know, you're trying to push buttons, but you can't figure out the right buttons to push. So confidence. Yeah. Confidence is a big thing. I mean, kids got to feel like they can do it and that they belong, and you've got to reinforce those principles with players because, you know, the days of beating players down and them responding just because they're supposed to. I mean, I think we all know those days are gone. So you got to find the right path for each player, and that's part of the art of coaching.
Obviously, as you said, testing is starting, and you guys are getting the new recruits, the new kids worked in. Does it give you more time to maybe work with them, having sort of this, and I unfortunate yet fortunate kind of break to have this sort of extra time to work with them, getting them ready for a season?
Well, yes and no. I mean, there's two parts to that question, because yes, we have less pressure and demands to start trying to get ready to field a competitive team for the beginning of October. But by the same token, we're very limited in what we can do. So there's more opportunity, but there's less opportunity. So
right, yeah.
Physically, we can't do a lot of the things that we want to do right now. So there's time, but there's not time to do probably the things right now that we would like to be doing, but I feel pretty fortunate that we're actually able to do anything. So I'll take that right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, getting started is a step forward for sure. You have the best idea for this. What's the competition like for jobs this year? Are there going to be players that are going to have to step up or yeah, find themselves sit?
Yeah. I mean, certainly there's going to be more competition. I mean, the roster is much deeper this year. You know, it's going to be a different kettle of fish for a lot of players. And it needs to be that way. I think it was always going to be designed to be that way.
Right.
And again, COVID presents a whole different specter of things that travel and or play, not feeling well, all those days are gone. And I think that's going to be not just the near future. I think that's going to be well into the future. So that affects, you know, your ability to practice and train. So you need more bodies for sure. There's no question. And yeah, I felt last year that, like I said, off the top, I felt kids were forced into roles where we couldn't insulate them. And I felt that as much as they gained a lot of really, really valuable experience, I just felt like a lot of stuff came too fast for them. And, you know, this year people are going to have to be, if we're able to play, people are going to have to be, you know, on their toes a little bit more and doing things consistently well to be able to crack the lineup. And I mean, I think as a coach, I want those tough decisions. I don't want to have easy decisions where I have no options, because then you fall into sort of a rote way of doing things and playing, and moving people around the lineup just doesn't really hold people accountable. It only does a certain amount of things, I think, as you well know. So,
yeah.
And it's not about holding it over people's heads. It's just about competition every day here. It's about the challenge of being one of those players that wants to step up and embrace that kind of stuff and not shrink from it. I think that's the reason our teams have traditionally been pretty successful here. You know, over the years, we've had that internal competition that I think you need.
Last year you had Amanda Schubert sort of come in and provide some quality veteran goaltender leadership with Aaron, in terms of Aaron Fargie given having an opportunity to sort of learn from her a little bit or whatever. Aaron will look like she'll carry the torch this year, but it seems you're gonna have a pretty spirited backup battle, if not a battle for all for both positions with Davidson and Ralph in there. How's the goaltending situation look for you so far?
Yeah, good. I mean, we have four right now, and you know, I think Farg's proved last year that she's more than capable. I didn't know exactly where she would be coming out of her first year, which didn't go great. I think she would tell you the same thing, but a lot of things there have straightened out, and I think she's a very proven, capable goaltender at the prep level, and now she's showing, you know, why I recruited her in the first place. Big, athletic, technically pretty solid. Compete level is very high. And certainly young goaltenders behind her there, I think, are more than capable. We're in a good spot there with the goaltending moving forward for sure. That's going to be very interesting to watch.
21-22 recruiting class looks like it's almost, if not completely complete. Obviously it's tougher this season if you had to recruit. There's not a lot of scouting opportunities because you can't travel and you can't go anywhere. How do you keep tabs on those players then when you're busy preparing for a season?
This 02 class and the 03 class, we spent probably I'm going to say two and a half years on both these classes. Okay. So I'm intimately familiar with what these players are capable of doing. Now you pose a good question. But I'm not overly too concerned about what happens with those kids this year, because they're faced with everything that everyone else is faced with. So, you know, I'm just looking forward to seeing those kids continue to develop and grow and, you know, really start to get their heads wrapped around coming here and being a productive part about what we want to do. So, yeah, it's funny how that worked, because, I mean, obviously no one could have foreseen this whole COVID thing coming, but being done that class takes a lot of pressure off, because we're able to move to the O4s already and have pretty close to the O4 class, to be honest with you, because it's a small class. So, you know, the O3 class, it's a pretty deep class again. So, this program has a lot of, pretty good people and, athletes coming its way here in the next few years.
I won't reveal it, because I know that if people want, they can go find it, but I'm not going to reveal it, because it's a bit of a reveal for you. Obviously Venlo was the first, Gontrova the next. You're gonna have another some more international flavor next year. Are you looking to keep that sort of pipeline open for keeping international players to come in? Is that something that you want to continue to do?
Yes, absolutely. You know, our institution has committed itself to, in terms of the athletics, I won't go into the details, but there's opportunities there for us to do those things. And having Venlo open the door here for us and sort of expose some people to what this program, you know, has to offer and those kinds of things is obviously invaluable. With the player you're talking about, Modessa, I mean, that certainly had a role to play, no question. She doesn't know Venla, and Venla doesn't know her, but they know of people that know each other, because Finland is a small country, really, and the hockey community is not that big. So I was able to tap into some things there, and I've also been able to tap into an overseas resource for someone that I've developed a relationship with that is helping me here too. So yeah, I mean, you know what, if we can get those kinds of athletes here, I think it does wonders for your program. And it just expands your, you know, your sort of base of being able to have your other players learn from players like that. You know, Modessa's in the Finnish Olympic stream as well, right? So whether she ever gets to play at that level, I don't know, but she is in that stream right now in their development team. So, you know, we're talking about a talented player who is really, you know, she's going to help us keep moving forward.
We're about a month away from the big announcement. October 8th is the date when Canada West will come out and determine whether or not there will be a winter session, as after the fall session was already canceled. What are your thoughts? Are you anticipating there will be a winter sports season for you guys?
I mean, I don't know. I really don't like to offer opinions on that kind of stuff. And it's not because I don't have an opinion. It's just because there's so many unknowns that it's hard for me to, place myself in on a Canada West committee that's looking at daily changing of things locally, provincially, nationally, internationally. Like, I don't even know what all the criteria is they're using. I don't know if it's provincial health guidelines. I don't know if it's uptick in cases. I don't know if it's fiscal issues with universities in the conference. I think it's all of those things. They have a really tough job ahead of them. The decision is a really difficult one. However, if it comes down to, you know, the safety of our student athletes, if that's what the ultimate decision is, which I assume that it will be, you know, I feel strongly they'll make the right decision, because I don't want to put these student athletes at risk. I don't want to put myself at risk, to be honest with you. Right. I got young kids and a family at home and those kinds of things too, right? So, yeah, I mean, I don't think it matters which side of the ledger you're on with this whole thing. Some people think it's overblown. Some people think it's, you know, the pandemic is, you know, the worst thing we've ever seen. So you have all these extreme views on what's going on. And, you know, I just honestly I'd love to play and I'd love our players to have a chance to compete, but I don't want it to be in a situation where we constantly are having to, where we can't focus on hockey and all we're doing is managing COVID. I don't think that's a healthy situation for anybody, to be honest with you. Right. I think mentally, emotionally, physically, I think that will take over. And if we're in that kind of situation, I'd rather we didn't play, to be honest with you. But if we're in a situation where it's manageable and safety protocols are followed and we can really focus on the task at hand, then I'm all for it.
I mean, I assume if they do go, it would be that regional idea they had proposed in the summer where, you know, we'd play Saskatchewan and Regina more often than anybody else. But I got to ask you, two new teams. Are you excited to have two new teams aboard and playing against you guys this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, originally I don't know if I was. I liked the 18 format because the schedule is nice and balanced. And I thought that was working really, really well. And I thought there was going to be issues with creating an unbalanced schedule. And then obviously, unfortunately, the Lethbridge situation happened. You know, so they had to go and revisit that again. Yeah, I mean, I think change is good. You know, I sometimes worry about sort of maybe getting watered down a little bit. You know, those coaches in Alberta where there's four teams, there were five with Lethbridge, there's four teams there, you know, that's a big challenge for them. And there's a lot of females playing hockey, but, you know, I'd like to make sure that the product has really been improving in the last few years overall. I mean, from top to bottom, I still believe it's probably the most competitive conference on a week-to-week basis. I really do truly believe that. You know, and I really want that to continue. So I hope that we're not watering the product down. I don't think we are, but I guess time will tell. Yeah, so I think change is good, and I think change for the sake of change isn't good, but change for the right reasons is good. So I feel like the change here has been made for the right reasons, and I think these schools have certainly something to offer, and hopefully it'll be a good thing.
Obviously more trips to Langley in the winter is a nice thing. More trips to Edmonton is not so great, being that it's cold in Edmonton. I got to ask you though, do you know anything about the teams? Have you heard anything? Do you know anything about how they play the game? Do you know anything other than I know what I know?
I know, I mean, at the ACAC level in Alberta, McEwen's had a lot of success. Mm-hmm. I mean, I certainly remember, you know, Lindsay, their head coach, because she was a great player. I mean, she's probably one of UA's, she's in her top five all-time players, I would think, if you look at stats and you look at leadership abilities. You know, and I think she's carried that over to the coaching piece. Trinity Western, I don't know as much about. I know who their coach is. I know he has a lot of experience, especially on the men's side. You know, and seems like in the limited dealings I've had with him, you know, and the club level there is what they've been playing is really hard to say. So I don't know. I mean, Trinity Western doesn't do anything half in. So I imagine that they'll be competitive pretty quickly. That's my guess. There are other sports that they're in would dictate that, I would think.
I was going to say, it seems like both teams are going heavy on Manitoba prospects as well. So there's a lot of players that we'll see probably come back that will go, hey, I know her.
Well, I think every team in Canada West is doing that. I mean, I don't think, I know, because what I just said before, with four teams in Alberta, now you got two teams in BC. You know, every team in Canada West recruits here. That's just how it is. Province. And so
I was going to say, Bishop's out in RSEC as well, added this year. Are you happy to see women's hockey growing at the university level? Because for a long time, it seemed like it, I don't want to say it stagnated, but it certainly didn't look like growth might be in the cards.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, I don't know, you probably actually know this more better than I would, but there's got to be close to 40 teams now.
Close to 50, actually, yeah.
50?
Yeah, with all the OUA teams and all the, you know, AUS.
My math isn't very good then.
I think it was like 47, I think, was the last count or something. So.
Holy smokes. Well, that being the case, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of female hockey players in this country, you know, and them having the opportunity from where it started, I mean, I wasn't on the ground floor, but I wasn't that far behind. You know, so, and where it's come from to where it is today is pretty amazing to watch. So these young females have a lot of opportunities in front of them, which is a good thing.
Speaking of an opportunity, I mean, I do want to ask you about Lethbridge, because I mean, obviously it affects you and affects the conference and affects, you know, who, where you're going and who you're going to play. Obviously politically, financially, all that stuff, we already know why it happened. We already know what it's happening for. My question for you though is your thoughts on losing a team that, okay, I mean, we can split hairs over how successful or unsuccessful they were in terms of point standings, but at the end of the day, there are 20 females, 20 women, 20 men that no longer can play hockey unless they transfer somewhere else now.
Yeah, I mean, you never like to see a team go and a program go, because you feel for the coaching staff and you know, you feel for the players and the student athletes, right? Because then, like you said, they're faced with a really tough choice. Do you continue to go to school there, or do you want to transfer and keep playing? The window's pretty small after junior for the guys, and you know, after triple A or prep for the girls. You know, the window closes pretty quickly for these players. So and for a lot of these players, that student athlete experience is kind of the highlight of their career. It's kind of the penultimate thing, right? So you feel for those kids. And I don't like to see teams go. It's unfortunate that it happened that way. And you know, but the reality of the situation is, I don't believe intercollegiate sport is on the top of you know, when universities have decisions to make, I don't think intercollegiate sport is something that, you know, they don't look to save intercollegiate sport first. I mean, that's just the reality of the fiscal situation that exists facing, you know, university administrations and those kinds of things. I think that shouldn't be a surprise to anybody that those things are happening. You know, and what call comes out of this whole mess, who really knows? So I'm just feeling fortunate that I'm able to sit in my office right now. And yeah, but I do feel for the people involved in that program.
I mean, we're fortunate as well. We had to still have you talking to us. So, I mean, that's always good to see as well. I got to ask, cause I mean, it's been asked of me and I can't answer it, cause I have no internal dealings with anything going on for you. Were you contacted? Did anybody reach out and ask if there was a spot at Manitoba for them to come and play from Lethbridge?
Yes.
Again, not giving away any names, just because you had already recruited, tough to fit anybody in, yeah?
Yeah, I think that would have had to have been someone that I was like, okay, she will automatically be someone that helps us right away. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't going to trade an apple for an apple kind of thing. I don't think that would have been a good decision. So without going in the long and the short of it, I felt like the ones, pretty much all the ones that reached out to me were kids that, you know, I was familiar with, but I didn't go, okay, I got to find a way to do this, because certain things were eligibility related. You know, and with a young team, if you're going to bring in a veteran transfer player like that, they've got to be a player that can really help you right away. Otherwise, I don't feel like it makes a lot of sense. So, you know, example would be someone like Carissa Kirkup, someone like Natasha Kostenko, who you're familiar with. Those were players that I knew were going to have immediate impacts and really help this program, even though their eligibility, they didn't have a ton of eligibility left. So that's what I would have been looking for, to be honest with you. And I didn't feel that came across my plate.
I mean, no, I mean, that's entirely fair. Like I said, we weren't sure what was happening. We only knew of Hayes. You know, and I was like, no, I'm no broadcaster, no idea. So on that line though, if one of your fifth years from this year, if Janae or Megan or Sheridan said, I'm coming back to school next year, would you let them redshirt this year?
Well, I mean, I don't know that's a conversation that I'm quite ready to have yet.
Okay.
Because yeah, there's other things at play there that I would have to have those conversations with the player first, and those other than one small minor little conversation, those things haven't happened, and I do know that they are all academically graduating. So I do know that that is happening. So again, I don't know. There's a lot of unknowns right now. So I wouldn't probably answer that question right now, I don't think.
No, I mean, that's entirely fair. Again, I was just one of those, what would you if those situations came up? I know that you may be a little distracted this year, though. You may be watching some other hockey because it seems like you may be following a specific player on a specific team this year. The Winnipeg Avros announced that number 19 this season will be worn by a Miss Marin Rempel. Congratulations, Coach, on having your daughter make the Avros. How proud is Dad of his daughter right now?
Very much so. I mean, she's just a really good kid, and that's I think what probably makes me more proud than anything else. I mean, she has really consummate leadership skills for such a young person. So she's very intrinsically motivated. She worked really, really hard with me off the ice this summer. We built a sort of a home gym in the garage, which we've been wanting to do for years and years, and COVID finally forced my hand and I actually got it done. So, you know, all my girls actually work out in that gym, and my wife works out in the gym there too now too. So it's kind of become sort of this family thing, and which is really cool. And just to see Marin be able to grow into, she's a good player and she deserves it. She deserves to be there. And, I think she's going to really enjoy it. I think she's going to be a positive addition to their group. So yeah, I'm pretty proud.
Ashley runs a pretty tight program over there. Ashley Van Engelen, head coach of the Avros. Again, you've benefited from a number of her graduates, you know, from Cameron Gillis, Emily Masse, Lauren Tereschuk, Alana Sharman, Nicole Carswell, Aaron Kucheravi, whole pile of players. And Alicia Anderson was in there as well. Rachel Godfrey will join you next year from the program as well. So another player too. So, I mean, obviously you're going to try and catch games when you can, and obviously when you're not busy, but when you're sitting there and you're watching Marin play, does dad role stay intact the whole time, or does coach slash scout role kind of creep in a little bit and you're like, oh, I got to keep an eye on that player?
Oh, that's a good question. All I would say is this: Marin will be free to explore if she's good enough and she has the opportunity to play at the next level. Whether or not she does, I don't know. But if she's free to do whatever she wants to do, I want her to be in a situation that she can make the best decision for herself. Again, if she's afforded that opportunity and people are interested in her, obviously, I'd love to coach my own kid. Would my own kid love to play for her dad? that depends which day you would ask her that.
All so right, yeah.
I mean she's 5'9", 170 pounds, and she can skate and she's offensively gifted. So as a coach with a coach hat on, I automatically would be looking at a player like that, because they don't come around that often in the female game. So she's got lots of things to work on and get better at, which she wants to, but yeah, some of both, I guess. Dad hat's on, coach hat is on a little bit too. So
I was gonna say, sometimes I'm here to watch Rachel, and I'm not here to watch you. It's, you can get away with it if you have to, right? Yeah. So, obviously, less tournaments this year, less opportunity to go, like I said, to go and scout, and less to see. We haven't heard anything about the Female World Sports School Classic, which obviously happens every year in Winnipeg. One of the biggest tournaments, and certainly for scouting, in Western Canada. One of those tournaments where we get to see a lot of the next year's players come in, and we saw a bunch of them from last year play and certainly succeed at that tournament. If the case comes down to, you guys are or aren't playing and certainly, going there, if you guys already have an 04 sort of plan sort of laid out and everything going, I know there are rules. Are there rules where you can and can't discuss anything? Because we've heard there may have been, at last year's tournament, there may have been some confusion as to what the rules were. Like, are you guys allowed to talk to players if they're not graduating?
Yeah, we are. There's no age restriction in U Sports in terms of talking to players. That's an NCAA thing.
Okay.
So yeah, U Sports coaches are allowed the freedom and the flexibility to that. That's one of the only recruiting advantages that we have over the NCAA, to be honest with you. So yeah, there's no, the only thing in place right now because of COVID is there's no face-to-face recruiting.
Right. Yeah.
There's a moratorium on that. And I believe the NCAA is the same right now. So there's no restrictions on that kind of thing. So again, that's one thing that I think U Sports coaches have done a better job of is exploiting that sort of lack of rules regarding ages, number of contacts, all that kind of stuff. There aren't rules around that kind of stuff. So
looking at some of the recruiting classes that are coming in for this year, the only class that really doesn't have a true quote unquote recruit, I guess, would be Calgary. Are you worried about Calgary this year in terms of having like a veteran recruiting class that they brought in? Everybody seems to have already had experience somewhere else. They were already good last year. Are you looking at they might be the team to beat this year, or are we sticking with our normal everybody's the team to beat as usual?
I'll be honest with you. I pay very little attention to what other teams are doing. I really honestly do. I just really don't. I just kind of take what comes in front of us every week, and yeah, we do our scouting report and all the rest of it, but I've really kind of gone away from worrying about what other teams are doing or not doing. I'm really focused on what we're doing. I know that's a Belichick answer, but it's really true. I know some coaches are all over what every other team is doing and who signed this person. I'll be honest with you. I don't have the time or the energy to keep up with that stuff. I don't worry about what other teams are doing, to be honest with you. I just worry kind of about what's in front of me and who's here. And that's really what I put my focus on. So you probably know way more than I do, to be honest with you.
Yeah, let us worry about that then. We're the broadcasters. We got to know about these players that are coming in, so that's okay. I guess the biggest thing then, going into, you know, not knowing what's going on yet, how do you keep the team motivated for the next, I'm going to say 4 months, because we don't know, there may not be games until January 3rd or 4th or whatever the first day is. How do you keep them motivated to really keep pushing and keep sort of, you know, I don't want to say going through the motions, but certainly, you know, running through the drills and doing all the stuff at high tempo, at high speed without, you know, going, there's no point to this.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's certainly some internal things that we can do. You know, I'm hoping to be able to maybe play some local teams in some exhibition stuff if the return to play protocols that allow us to do that. So there might be some of that. I think there's ways to engage these players every day in terms of making it a competition. You know, I think that's, for the large part, our program has done that a good job of that in the past X number of years. You know, where we sort of take that mentality anyway, and it's, you know, some of the reasons for the fact that we've been able to do some things in some years. So I'm not really worried about that too much. You know, we're not going to practice 4 days a week and train 5 days a week for 4 months, because that won't accomplish anything. But I think, you know, stepping on things at the right times and you know, keeping it fun, keeping it challenging, I think those things are really important. Giving them a reason to look forward to coming to the rink every day, I think that's really important. So it doesn't become monotonous and repetitive. You know, doing some different things off the ice as a group to get to know each other are always important, I think. I think the players do a really good job of that. I don't like to get too terribly involved in that anymore. I think that's an organic thing that needs to happen. So I think all those things rolled into one. You want to make it a positive student-athlete environment. And, I mean, that's, I guess, what we're focusing on. So the motivation, the reward at this level is playing on the weekends. I mean, everybody knows that for the work you put in during the week. But I still think there's ways that we can do those things. So
I got about 2 or 3 minutes left here, John, if you want to do some goofy, fun softball kind of questions where you can laugh and not take them very seriously if you want.
Fire away.
Okay, let's get to this. Have some fun with this. What kept you most busy? I mean, you can, and kids doesn't count because we know your kids always have you busy, but what kept you most busy when you were off over the summer?
New puppy.
New puppy. Look at you. What's puppy's name?
Bauer.
Oh, right on. There you go. So puppy kept you busy. In terms of, and again, you can decline to answer this if you want. In terms of rinks you were at last year, rinks that you traveled through, which rink do you hate going to the most?
Oh man, what rink do I hate going to the most? Well, it used to be Lethbridge.
Okay.
So there you go.
All right, I can stick with that. We've had other answers. Like a lot of people don't like Claire Drake for some reason. So
I like that place.
Matt, I mean, we joked with Matt about that's where dreams go to die. So, yeah. What rink do you like? What do you like? And again, I'm pretty sure I know what the answer is. Do you like Belcher better than everywhere else now?
Yeah, I mean, they did a good job there. That's a good spot. They really took their time planning that place. Yes, I like that place a lot.
Is there one, and again, and not that there's rivalries between you guys in terms of your coaching, you and the different coaches around, is there one coach that when you come in, you're like, I love coaching against this guy, or I love coaching against this gal in terms of standing across from him?
Well, I mean, I think it's Howie Draper because, again, Howie's similar to Peter in that if your team is not prepared, and you are not on your toes on the bench, they will expose you really quickly, as you know. So I think the epic battles we've had over the years have just sort of driven each other to be better. You know, I have a lot of respect for Howie. I have a lot of respect for the way that he handles his athletes, the way, obviously, success on the ice, off the ice, in his program. You know, he's a person that you're constantly trying to chase. He's an innovator. He's, you know, those kinds of things. So, yeah, it'd be him for sure.
I mean, I don't want to say that we caught you smiling, but was it fun to take that game off him at the end of the year last year?
Well, I mean, you know what I would say about that game is that it reflected the fact that we actually were able to improve from day one to day whatever. It ended up being in February. I thought there was tremendous growth in our team. I thought our young kids really, really improved, and we really had nothing to play for other than pride and, you know, our 2 5th years that we were trying to send out. And it was nice. I never mind taking them down.
I gotta say, it was a pretty complete game. We were pretty happy with what we saw up in the broadcast booth there. Last question for you, John, before we let you get out of here today. If you could go back, I don't know to what year, whenever you like, but if you could go back and talk to younger John Rempel, what advice would you give to him today?
That would take me a lot longer than the 1 minute you have.
Let's say you go back prior to 2018 national champion, John, then just before going into nationals, what would you tell John?
Just to enjoy the moment and really, yeah, enjoy the moment because, you know, as we've all learned here in the last 6 months, you start taking things for granted a little bit and just assume that things are going to be a certain way. All of a sudden they're not. So you better enjoy the moments that you're in and embrace them and fully invest in them and, you know, not get caught in the everyday slug of what you're doing here. So that's what I would say.
No, that's great advice. I mean, certainly, I mean, now, especially nowadays, things are certainly a lot different than what they were. So great advice for yourself there. John, can't thank you enough for doing this. We always enjoy talking to you. Obviously, we'll let you get back to work and doing what you need to do to get ready for the season. And we'll talk to you at some point, hopefully before January, before, knock on wood, Can West says there's a season to be played. So thanks for doing this again, John.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. Good to talk to you.
So there is John Rempel, head coach of the Manitoba Bisons women's hockey program here on The Hockey Show. Glad to have had him on. He's always a great guest and certainly provides us with lots of insight as to what's happening with his team and certainly around Canada West. In saying that, folks, make sure you get out and support Canada West Hockey this year. Make sure you buy, if you have to, buy the Canada West TV package maybe and support the team from afar. Not sure if we're going to have anybody in the stands, but we'll see where everything comes down to on October 8th when Canada West makes that decision. With that, folks, we are out of here for another week. Thanks for joining us here on The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM. Stay tuned, Free Range Radio with Skippy coming up next here on the station.